Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/coldslither. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Once again, that's audibletrial.com/coldslither.
The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I am tonight's guest special, everything under the sun host at Agent_70 on Twitter. I'm flying a solo mission tonight because our regular guest hosts, are all indisposed at this moment. At TimDogg98 on Twitter, our normal lead host, is on vacation, recharging his battery. So hope you're enjoying your vacation, Tim, and, safe travels. At Roddy Cat's back to his regular shift. In the meantime, you can catch all of his news tweets at his Twitter account at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Needs. Did I just blow that? I think I called it at News Nerds Needs, and I totally fell into the trap that Tim used to fall into. It's at News Nerds Need. And our final a regular host, at PCN_dirt on Twitter, is helping a friend out in need. And he may very well be joining me on the show tonight later on. But in the meantime, you can check out his Twitter account at PCN_dirt or his website, popculturenetwork.com. Let me get these plugs out of the way. I've already covered a few of them. You want to visit our website, www.theclicknation.com, and make sure you hit up our podcast network, coldslitherpodcast.com, and another network that we're part of, comicrelated.com. Also visit redbubble.com to help support the Cold Slither podcast by purchasing items with your favorite Cold Slither podcast network podcast logos and other symbols related to our podcast. You can get mugs, t-shirts, and other items emblazoned with our logos and help support our podcast and keep our podcast free. All right. So, as usual, we will lead off the show tonight with a quick recap of comic book related movie news. The first bit of news is that, let me start with what's been on TV, and this will lead into one of the first bits of news that I found very interesting this week. This week on superhero related television, we witnessed the finale of what's arguably been the best superhero TV show produced to date, and that is The Flash. Now, The Flash ended, my understanding is, ended on a cliffhanger, which isn't, unusual. But I just gave away something that I'm kind of afraid to admit. I did not watch this week's episode of The Flash. I'm actually somewhat behind. There's a couple of episodes that I missed that I'd like to catch up on before I watch the finale. But anyway, I understand that it was a very good episode. I read a lot of reviews that said that it's really one of the best finale episodes for a superhero TV show ever, and it's pretty heartening to hear that said about the show. One of the things that's been teased and announced in recent weeks is that CW is putting out a show called Legends of Tomorrow, which is going to be starring a lot of it's a spinoff starring a lot of characters that were introduced on both the Flash show and the Arrow show. And what's been announced this week is that this Legends of Tomorrow show, they've announced the main villain for the first season, and that villain is Vandal Savage. Now, if anyone is familiar with DC lore, Vandal Savage is a longtime DC villain who, you know, no pun intended, is one of the quirks to this particular character, which, you know, I'm not all that familiar with him, but I know that one of the quirks to the character is that he's very long-lived. You know, he's got I guess that's one of his special abilities or powers, is that he was a former caveman and gained genius-level intellect and has lived a very, very long life. I can foresee that being, a huge part of the show, at least telling that particular part of his origin. But, it's kind of cool that they would fold in, you know, this particular character as the big bad for Legends of Tomorrow. Something that made me, you know, something that crossed my mind when I was thinking of this major villain, the aspect of time. And, you know, Vandal Savage is as part of his story is that he's long lived and he's lived this, and I know that at least in the animated versions of the DC universe, he's also a time traveler at some point. Forgive me for maybe botching that up a little bit. But it's funny that, you know, there's definitely some aspect of time or time travel involved with Vandal Savage, where I know that that's going to be a big aspect of the Flash show in season two. And, I'm getting a little bit into what I'm afraid of with season two of The Flash, that being time travel. And I know that they've broached the topic on the show, but, you know, it's for myself, if there's one thing I was always happy to sort of stay away from in the Flash comics and just DC comics in general, was the aspect of time travel. I know it's a big deal in the DC universe, especially with the Flash, but I was happy that they stayed away from that until the very end of the first season and did not delve into it that much. What I'm afraid is going to happen is that the show is going to become very convoluted and very confusing to even, you know, the semi-serious watcher. And, you know, introducing a character like Vandal Savage that's going to kind of provoke more time and time travel related stories, I guess we're just going down this particular path. I don't want to say it's a slippery slope, but, you know, I guess we're all going that we're going to get there eventually. It's going to be the DC TV universe is going to be rife with time related stories. So, we're going down that road starting with this coming television season. Yes, I'm answering at MattWang97 on Twitter. He's asking, am I by myself tonight? I am for now. I know that at PCN_dirt may very well be joining me, but right now I am flying this mission solo. Back to the news. So apparently the producers of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. have confirmed that there is a Secret Warrior setup. But there's questions as to whether or not it'll actually lead into Civil War. I'm not sure how that's going to connect right away. Obviously, there's a great Secret War setup. If any listeners or viewers out there watch the season finale of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and you're eagle-eyed, you saw that the file that Coulson hands to Sky / Daisy Johnson has a label on it. That label reads Caterpillars. And if you read Secret Warriors by Hickman and a number of artists, Caselli and some others with Jim Chung on covers, you would recognize this Caterpillar program as being part of Fury's means of cultivating superpowered agents for S.H.I.E.L.D. So that's pretty much confirmation that the Secret Warrior setup is there. We'll see if it leads into Civil War. As a quick aside, any viewer may actually be wondering what it is I have on my head. Yes, that is a New York Rangers hat. Yes, I am a New York Rangers fan. I am supporting the Rangers through their playoff run. Yes, we are down 2-1, but hoping for a better outcome in Game 4. That's tomorrow night, 8 o'clock Eastern time. Let's go, Rangers. Back to movie/TV news. So apparently Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 is cast as Bebop. Do you really think I care to tell you who it might be? I'm just glad that at least one of these characters is coming to the movie screen. I'm still hesitant to commit to even saying I'm going to see this. Back to The Flash. So the actor that plays Cisco, Carlos Valdez, teases Vibe and apparently wants more romance on The Flash Season 2. Now, you know, I don't want to belabor what I've read. I don't want to spoil too much about The Flash Season finale. Just as a quick aside, we may be doing Treasury editions to recap both The Flash and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Arrow for anyone who might be interested in that. So be on the lookout. Stay tuned to see when we end up doing Treasury editions for these. It's definitely going to be after this weekend because I have not yet watched The Flash season finale, but soon. So be on the lookout. In any event, if anyone heard about what was teased in The Flash Season 2, there's going to be some characters being introduced that hit very close to home to Barry and Star Labs, and I'm kind of curious as to where this romance may come from that Carlos Valdez wants for Cisco. So we will see where that goes, but it will prove to be some interesting stories that's fertile storytelling ground for The Flash if the showrunners give Carlos Valdez what he wants, and that's more romance for Cisco. I can skip over that. Let's see. Any children of the 80s would be interested to know that The Last Starfighter may be spawning a sequel. I don't have much more than that. It looks like the screenwriter has said that the sequel may be in the works. If it is, that's great. I do remember liking that movie. I don't remember very many of the titles, but many of the details, but hoping that they turn out something that's respectful of what came before and tells a good new story. Now I'm opening up a new story that is relevant to this show because it involves a previous guest, and that previous guest wrote the graphic novel The Fifth Beatle, which told the story of the manager of the Beatles. And our former guest name is Vivek Tiwari. And so apparently the story reads, prolific independent entertainment studio IM Global is teaming up with Vivek and Simon Cowell Psycho Entertainment to co-produce the feature film version of The Fifth Beatle. That's pretty cool. And the screenplay is going to be written by Vivek as well. So good news for fans of The Fifth Beatle. It was a great book. I'm proud to say that I have my copy up here. It's actually signed by Andrew Robinson. I'm waiting to meet Vivek in person so that he can sign my copy. So that's great news for him. I know that he talked about a potential movie deal, and I'm glad to read and hear that they've officially announced the partnership for the production of the movie. So that is great news, and we'll be sure to check in on the progress of the production on a later date. All right, let's see. Now I love how a lot of the news this week seemed to revolve around The Flash season finale. So I guess it's this week's or the latest Variety cover. The producer of The Flash show, Greg Berlanti, is also producing the Supergirl show on CBS. And I saw this image of the cover of Variety where both stars, the stars of the respective shows are both on the cover with the producer. And obviously that's there to fuel speculation, or at least fanboy hopes that these shows will be interconnected and there will be some sort of crossover. I don't know what's in the story. I do know that my understanding, at least, is that they're going to hold off on connecting Supergirl. They're going to hold off from connecting Supergirl to the greater DC TV universe for a little while, at least. I don't know if they plan on doing it at the end of the season or not, but I know they're going to hold off. So we'll see how that plays out. I think it's in their best interest to tie it in sooner rather than later, because Arrow and Flash seem to be playing off each other very well on the CW. So I think Supergirl will benefit from playing off the other two. So, you know, it's all Flash all the time, apparently. So Phil Lord, I believe, is a producer, or definitely someone who is in part of the production aspect. Yes, they are. Phil Lord is a screenwriter, and he's confirmed that as a screenwriter for the Flash movie, Ezra Miller, who was announced as being cast as being as playing the Flash in the DC Universe movies, Ezra Miller will be playing Barry Allen, which obviously conflicts with Grant Gustin playing Barry Allen on the TV show The Flash, and that's kind of it's kind of sad, actually. You know, Grant Gustin's done a great job of really introducing this character and creating a character that's worth rooting for. And it's kind of sad that the movie character is going to be vastly different looking, a completely different person. Be nice if it was the same. Not that Grant Gustin's doing poorly for himself, and not that Ezra Miller is a bad actor. He's not by any means, but it's just disappointing that they've I'm kind of beating a dead horse here. It's disappointing that they cast a different actor to play the Flash in the movies. So, more fanboy service a little. So apparently, the Star Wars The Force Awakens writer has teased that we have not yet seen the last of Lando Calrissian. Billy Dee Williams, here's hoping that we see you again on screen very soon. More DC TV news. So the Titans TV show that was announced for the TNT network, it is still in development and may shoot over this summer. So be on the lookout for more news on that. Let's see here. We're getting down to the end. Let's see here. Oh, I'd be remiss if I did not speak about this. Take a sip of the espresso so I can talk about this. So there is a rumor that Marvel is speaking to Matthew McConaughey, the famed actor, speaking to him and possibly asking him to play the role of Norman Osborn in the Spider-Man reboot. Now, do we really need another Norman Osborn in another Spider-Man reboot? Can't we just move forward with another villain? I'm intrigued by Matthew McConaughey playing Norman Osborn. Kind of hesitant to hear him say, all right, all right, all right. But I'm kind of intrigued to see his name attached to this role. It could prove to be interesting. But ultimately, I think I am in the large group of fans that do not want a real retelling of Spidey's origin, and kind of don't want another Green Goblin appearance, or at least another heavy dose of Osborn. Of the Osborn family in the newest Spider-Man movie. You know, we've had enough of Harry and Norman for a little while, I think. But we'll see what Marvel has in store for their Spidey mini / major reboot. All right. This week we saw in solicits, Marvel doing their August solicits, Valiant doing their August solicits, pretty much everybody doing their August solicits this week. So if you have, I'm not going to delve too far into them, but if you have not gone through the solicits to see what you may be ordering or pulling for August, do so now. Make sure you get your orders into your local comic book store early so that they can order your books for you and have enough on the shelf. As a close friend of some comics retailers, I know that is a big deal to them. So make sure you get in there, take a look at the solicits, and when you have the chance to prepare your pull list, a month, 2 months ahead of time, please do so. All right, now we're going to get into comic news. Let's see what I need to talk about. So I'm going to pull up the story, and I recall talking about this story before, and this involves Jerry Conway, a longtime creator for DC Comics, and there were some issues about royalties involving creations that have spanned, that, you know, creations that were originally created in comics and have spanned across media going into television. And and apparently Jerry is he made some pretty pointed remarks about the royalty and equity policies involving these involving the characters that he helped create and that have crossed different forms of media from comics to television. So apparently, after some statements made by DC and by Dan DiDio and Jeff Johns, Conway has now issued a public apology to DC and the aforementioned comic creators, saying that he stands by his basic argument against DC's policy regarding these derivative characters, of how these characters and derivations of these characters have crossed into different media. He states that he needs to take back pretty much everything he said, especially his characterization of the motives of the individuals involved in developing, explaining, and implementing DC's Creators Equity Program. Basically, it's a big, big my bad. I'm not going to go into everything he says, but apparently, you know, he's taking back what he said and restating that DC is doing its best to try to do right by its creators and former creators. You know, coming from the legal profession, I can definitely tell you that these programs are obviously meant to to give credit where credit is due, but at the same time, you know, money, you know, much like in Vegas, the house always wins. So it's never going to be as equitable as it could be. We'll leave it at that. All right. Let's see what else we're going to talk about. So we spoke about this on the show earlier, not tonight, but in earlier episodes. Archie Comics had started a Kickstarter, to jump on the, I guess, crowdfunding bandwagon and announce some books, but has now canceled this Kickstarter since Archie entered into, I believe they entered into a big partnership with a major American retailer who shall not be named because I'm not trying to plug them on our show. But as a result of this particular partnership, Archie was heavily criticized in social media for attempting to dip in both dip into the coffers of corporate America and asking for crowdfunding help from individuals like you and me. And basically the Kickstarter has been canceled, and we shall see where we find our Archie books coming from next. Let's see here. So Image Expo is returning in July. Sales statistics for April have come out, and Star Wars and Convergence ruled the charts. That's good to hear, although I'm surprised to hear that Convergence actually made a dent in sales, considering that so many of these Convergence books have been so hard to read. And every comic shop I walk into seems to have a lot of Convergence titles still sitting on their shelves. So chalk that one up to pre-orders. We'll see them in the dollar bin soon enough. All right. Let's see here. Another bit of news. The Marvel Universe is going to jump forward 8 months in the wake of Secret Wars. So when Secret Wars ends, we'll be jumping to a feature point 8 months, eight months ahead, giving creators ample opportunity to create fresh points for new readers to jump on. You know, that's the company line. So we'll see how that plays out from the end of Secret Wars and how the end of Secret Wars is is utilized to create new jumping on points. Uncanny X-Men number 600 will be released 5 months after it was originally scheduled to come out. It's going to be coming out in October, post Secret Wars, and I think that that has some, you know, there's definitely something Secret Wars related to that. In another bit of comics legal news, Marvel has finally registered the Timely Comics trademark after 74 years. So if you were going to trademark Timely Comics, too late. Now, give me a moment. I'm going to kind of wax poetic about something I remember growing up. And this story kind of made me think back very fondly on the original Secret Wars and some of the other comics of the 80s that a particular artist drew. And the artist that I'm speaking about is Mike Zeck. Now, Mike Zeck was a longtime Marvel and DC artist, but I definitely knew him more for his Marvel work. And I didn't really recognize his art on Master of Kung Fu, although now I'm going back into back issues and finding these issues with his artwork on them. But he made his name there and then transitioned onto a long stint on Captain America with Mark Gruenwald. And it's there where I discovered his art. And, you know, it was just great stuff, phenomenal, very superheroic. You know, all of his heroes were just, you know, broad, barrel-chested dudes. And, you know, that's one thing I really remember about his art is that the heroes were just very heroic looking. And one of the highlights of his career was Marvel Superheroes Secret Wars, the crossover event, the miniseries that obviously inspires the current Secret Wars and was the first event book miniseries to comics, and basically spawned a host of events after that. So IDW is publishing an artist edition that is entitled Mike Zeck's Classic Marvel Stories. So it is a compilation of some of the Marvel stories that they were able to gather the original art for, and and they're able to gather them and put them into one place. Now, there's an article here on comicbookresources.com that I did read in advance, and one of the difficulties that Zeck and IDW ran into is that these pages had been sold, you know, many of his art pages had been sold over the years, and they had a heck of a time trying to piece together some of these books with the various pages of comic book art that had been sold, putting these together, or at least amassing the various pages in order to publish the complete book, proved to be a challenge. So what they did was they pulled together as many as they could, and they chose specific issues to highlight. And in this IDW collection, I believe they're including the first issue of Marvel Superhero Secret Wars. They're including issues 1 and 2 of the Punisher Limited series that Zeck and Stephen Grant did seminal work, pretty much the definitive Punisher series. No apologies to the more recent stuff. That's the Grant and Zeck stories is pretty much what inspires all of the Punisher stories from that point forward. There's also 2 issues of Captain America and one issue of Kraven's Last Hunt. It looks like it's the first issue in that crossover story from the Spider-Man books in the late 80s, early 90s. You know, seminal story. So this is actually an artist edition that I'm looking forward to. I'm actually going to seriously consider plunking down the hard-earned bucks to get a copy of this, maybe more so to get a copy, you know, to really look at the pencils of Marvel Superheroes Secret Wars #1. You know, the cover to that is obviously classic, but if you go into the interior stuff, there's some really great pencil work in there as well. Really, really, expressive artwork, you know, great design too. That's where a lot of the designs that are being reutilized in the new Secret War series come from, like the ships that that at least in the original story that the Beyonder creates to house the heroes and villains before they're transported to Battleworld when they're initially teleported off of Earth. Those ships are the designs here, presuming those are straight from Zek's brain, have been the design's been reutilized in the current series. And there's also a lot of callbacks in the new series to this original one, so it's nice to it's nice to see that this will be coming out in raw pencil art, and it'll give people like me a chance to really study the line work that that Zek put into that issue and some of the other really really classic issues that he worked on. So be on the lookout for that. Let's see here. See if there's anything else before I get into this week's comics. Some sad news. DC Comics has canceled Infinity and the Forever People once again. Is that a big surprise? Probably not. I wasn't reading it. Were you? Any supporters should get on social media and complain because, that seems to be the way of the world these days. That's pretty much it for comic news. In the variant corner, there's some cool stuff out there. I know that there's going to be Gwen Stacy-centric covers coming up soon for Marvel. Let's see here. All right. Oh, looky, looky. I've actually gotten to the end of news, and I am going to be reading our ad. I'm going to kind of stick with what I know. I'm going to be reading the ad for Amazon. Keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Visit coldslitherpodcast.com, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon.com as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, jewelry, apparel, etc., etc. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment that helps us keep the Comic Book Chronicles podcast free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Now, I'm going to say that again. Amazon sends the Cold Slither Podcast Network a payment that helps us keep the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles podcast free, $3.99 for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through coldslitherpodcast.com. Do it today. Also, if you shop at Amazon often, bookmark the link or add it as your homepage so that you can help the CSPN each time you order. We thank you for your support. Holler. All right. Got through the ad. Now, we're going to get into this week's books. Now, I'm going to be pulling up this week's list of comics on comicslist.com. So, this week, we are still neck deep in Convergence, although we are reaching the end sooner rather than later. I'm going to start with a couple of Convergence, or at least one Convergence book that I read as a longtime fan of the New Teen Titans, and that is Convergence New Teen Titans number 2. Now, I probably did confuse this with the Titans Convergence book, which was very Roy Harper-centric. This book focuses more on the Wolfman Perez group that was introduced in New Teen Titans number 1 and evolved over time to include a great number of characters, including Jericho, the son of Deathstroke the Terminator. But I wanted to mention that Marv Wolfman did write this Convergence series, the two issues of this book. Nicola Scott did the art on this, and it's actually, it's actually very pleasant on the eyes, and this is probably the Convergence book that I enjoyed the most. Obviously, I'm the target audience. As a fan of the New Teen Titans, this one obviously was a little easy to read because it involved characters I actually wanted to read about and cared about. But what we find here in this issue, spoiler alert, is that there is an alternative to Telos's kill or be killed, survival of the fittest edict that was delivered at the in the first issue of all these Convergence books and at the beginning of the Convergence event and miniseries, which is almost the classic Beyonder edict. Kill the other side, and everything you wish for is will be granted. At least in this case, it was kill everyone that you're. That you've been ordained to fight, and your city will survive, or your world will survive another day. So the new Teen Titans are tasked with fighting. Who is it? These people? Who are these people? This is the Doom Patrol. Wish I could tell you. I don't. It's a forgettable bunch of people. How sad is that? But basically, what we find is that at the end of this, the good guys figure out that they can work together and try to solve things. Then all of a sudden, the other side is basically teleported away, and the new Teen Titans are left, presumably teleported back to their reality. But we're left not knowing exactly where that where they actually are. That's sort of left in the air. But ultimately, what we find at the end of this issue is that there is an alternative to destroying your enemies. And, we don't get as much hero on hero violence and nobody dies. So, we find out in this issue that there is an alternative to the kill or be killed that Telos asked of these heroes. Now, Convergence number 7, I'm not going to call it mumbo jumbo, but it's definitely a lot of there's a lot of things going on in this book. I'm not going to pretend that I understand all of it. I do know that we're reaching the end. I do know that I believe this is the penultimate issue, and I believe what they're trying to set up is something that we had spoken about on the show in previous weeks that DC was headed towards, which is creating a history for the DC universe that involves or that incorporates every single reality that has been put forth up until now, and includes the crises and the flashpoints and all the other stuff. And they're going to be molding the new 52 into something that that incorporates all of that history into one richer, grander history. So we'll find out in the next issue of Convergence next week that finally lets us know where we're going to be post-Convergence. So I'm glad that this is almost over. I think that, 8 issues of this has been a lot of, fluff involving Earth 2. I know we've said this on the show before, but Earth 2, listen, if you care about it, great. If not, you could probably read Convergence issues 6, 7, and 8 and really get the gist of what's going on and not have to necessarily read the first, 5 issues of this Convergence miniseries and really understand where DC's going with this. So I've really only started paying attention to this the latter half of the miniseries, and it's okay. You can follow it, but the first half is really tough to keep up with if you're not concerned with any of the Earth 2 characters. I was not able to read any of the other Convergence books this week. There's a bunch of them out there: Adventures of Superman number 2, Convergence Batman and the Outsiders number 2. But the bottom line is it's almost over. We're almost back to the DC universe as we know it, or as we will know it. So, with any luck, comic retailers won't have completely lost their shirts over this Convergence event. Now, moving on to the other event that's happening in comics, and that's Secret Wars. So this week marked more Secret Wars related comics. The first release that garnered a lot of attention was A-Force number 1. And one of the reasons why it garners a lot of attention is that there's word that this is going to be the book, or at least the concept, of an all-female Avengers team that is going to carry over into the Marvel Universe post-Secret Wars. So it's interesting to see the dynamics that are being put forth you know, in this issue. So just as a quick recap, as I get dinged by people. Ooh. So let's see here. While I try to figure out how to get people invited into this thing while I'm broadcasting, forgive me for having to pause. It's talking about A-Force. And I think one of our co-hosts wants to join this conversation. Forgive me for pausing to try to figure this out. It's not as easy as Tim makes it out to be. I love it. I wish I could get that thing to keep going. Apparently, it doesn't keep going if I keep, you know, unless I keep clicking it. That kind of stinks. Let's see here. How can I get an invite out? Let's see. Will this work? Let us see. Tick, 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 tick. Well, anyway, so A-Force involves one particular kingdom of Battleworld that is protected by the majority of the female heroes. Wait a second. There he goes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Greetings. What's up? I can't see you.
I'm here.
Yeah, I can hear you.
I'm here. You can't even see me? I'm wearing a Rangers hat.
Well, no, because my picture's frozen on a picture of me for some stupid reason.
Ladies and gentlemen, Roddy Cat.
Forgot I had a couple of minutes, and I'm taking a couple of minutes, and I'm in a somewhat secure location.
I love it.
So pop in there for a minute. So what you doing?
I appreciate you, Roddy, for putting in the news bits. It's tough to go through that on your own because I don't have that time to really open the link and kind of peruse it and then talk about it.
Yeah, indeed.
You know, like I was sort of going off of the blurbs and talking about some of the things that really interested me, like the Mike Zeck IDW Artist Edition, because I remember reading that article and I was so excited about it.
Right.
So I am up to comic reviews. So
sweet.
I literally just started. I only read two Convergence books, and you know, I kind of wax poetic about the new Teen Titans because, of course, you know, that's me. I'm a fan for that. And I talked about the Convergence limited series issue number 7, which is the penultimate issue of that. But I literally just started with Marvel, and I just started talking about A-Force.
Okay, great. Yeah.
So did you read A-Force number 1?
I did read A-Force number 1. I enjoyed that.
I was just describing the premise, which is this particular kingdom in Battleworld is protected by what essentially is like the lead female heroes of the Marvel Universe.
Correct.
You know, going across all the teams, you know, Avengers, X-Men, Runaways even. So
yeah, it is essentially a female Avengers, if you think about it that way.
Right.
So these Secret Wars, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Some of these Secret Wars stories, at least starting off, are kind of compelling. This one is no different, and I guess we'll get to a couple of the other ones.
Absolutely. But, you know, listen, while we're here, we'll talk about everything you read because you have a short period.
Yeah. But yeah, A-Force was really good. You know, here you see, like, just like you probably have already gone over, you have this team, you know, that are patrolling Arcadia, which is, you know, I'm not sure where Arcadia comes in the whole bigger landscape, but I probably do know it. I just don't.
Well, for viewers who can actually see my picture, I'm holding up the fold-out map of Battleworld that I got from my local comic shop, and Arcadia is located. Where is number 35? Arcadia is an island that is located on, I guess if you're looking at the globe, it would be located where Australia is, sort of.
Right.
So that is the location where these heroes are sworn to protect. And they defend. And what we also learn is that there's some common stories that are running through some of these Secret Wars books that involve the boundaries and the borders between kingdoms.
Right.
And we learn that, you know, there really are penalties to, or at least there are penalties that are enforced by the Thor Corps, or the Thors.
Right.
Let's
stick to Thor Corps, because that book comes out, that's exactly what I'm going to call it.
You know? So, you know, we'll stick to that. We'll call it the Thor Corps, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's... Yeah.
So, like I said, you know, what we learn is, you know, there is one common thread through these books is that, you know, there are ramifications for crossing borders,
mm-hmm.
you know, within Doom's battle world. And
in this case, we find that somebody has actually, well, I guess we're going to find out what seems to be also another thing of these books is that you're going to find a lot of people, you're going to find some people running afoul of these, you know, of these laws, and this book is no different, because we find that when America Chavez did
definitely.
So, but you were gonna say
exactly. There's something about. I was just gonna say there's something about if you have America in your code name, you kind of run afoul of Doom's rules. If anyone read Planet Hulk, right. You know, we'll get to that. I don't know if you read that, Roddy.
I did not. As a matter of fact, I was telling Tim. Tim was on Twitter earlier, and shout out to Matthew Wang. You know,
yep.
They were both. I think Tim said he had read it, and I think Wang said he was going to get it, but he hadn't.
Right. I won't go too far into spoilers because you haven't read it. But
right.
You know, let's just say there is. You know, if you have America in your code name, you're probably running afoul of the rule of Doom in Battle World. We'll put it that way.
Right. So wait, so answer me this. Does that take place slightly after A-Force?
I'm sorry, you're breaking up on me. Say again.
Oh, does that take place after A-Force? Am I still breaking up? Oh.
I think they're running I think everything is running sort of concurrently.
Well, no. What I mean is the story from A-Force, does that go bleed into Planet Hulk?
Rod?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Does the A-Force story bleed into Planet Hulk?
No. I didn't want to. No, it doesn't really bleed into it. But I just wanted to talk about what happens in Planet Hulk, only to the extent that, you know, like I said, if you know who the lead character is in Planet Hulk, or at least the hero of the story, at least in the first issue, you're running afoul of the rule of Doom. That's all I wanted to say.
I got you.
So
yeah.
So all right. A-Force. What else did you read real quick while I got you on?
There was some A-Force I was going to bring up, but I just moved. Excuse me. So, what else did I read? I don't have. See, I have. I'm only have my phone on me. And I don't have my tablet on me at the moment. But I did read Battle World. Since we're still on Secret Wars, I guess we'll run through all of that because I hadn't really read too many. Oh, Battle World. Let's go ahead and get to that one real quick.
No problem.
I'm trying to remember what happened. Oh, so here we have, speaking of running afoul of things, we have a lone wolf, Frank Castle. Well, it's not necessarily lone wolf. Have you read it?
Right.
Okay.
I have. I'm trying to pull it up now so that I can speak cogently on this. You know what I'm saying? So right.
So we have one Frank Castle roaming the lands, which is something you're not supposed to do in this world. You know, just free roaming, and he was getting away from... I guess, would be the four horsemen of Limbo, let's say. At least that's how they play off.
Right.
Which brings up something for me. Oh, Frank Castle also has another traveler, let's just say, with him in the shape of one Dr. Strange.
Right.
Which is weird, considering there is a Dr. Strange, you know, in the story proper. Well, excuse me, Sheriff Strange, but it's still him, you know? So I don't know if that's strange that is. So, and we have... I kind of like it because we have Punisher who's been pretty much possessed by Dr. Doom. So it's kind of just like I said earlier, it's kind of like Dr. Voodoo, where Dr. Voodoo kind of has this other spirit along with him. And I'm kind of digging that because Punisher can call upon Dr. Strange's powers and but to his own, you know, in his own ways.
Absolutely. I enjoyed this little, I enjoyed the story. I did like the Imperial Four,
yes.
The callback to the all new Fantastic Four from the art from that 2 issues of Art Adams' work.
Oh yeah, that's right. When that the what I call the Misfit Four.
Yes, yes. That, you know, those are some great issues. I love the callback on that.
Mm-hmm. Which there's been a lot of those in the Secret Wars, which is why I'm kind of been digging what's been going on so far. But in this one, like I said, Frank Castle runs afoul of let's see, I'm not. This is a weird thing because apparently he's been running from these four.
Right.
But now they've caught up with him again, and then they duke it out, which I'm, as if anybody did not know already, the Battle World books proper are the ones where all the fights are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I guess, would be our first fight of the series. Well, it's not necessarily the first fight, I guess, but I guess it's the first proper one. So,
right. And, I mean, what it comes down to is, these are the tangential fights that we see, on the periphery of the Secret War story. So, it's kind of cool to see what happens to the Punisher.
Well, because the way they have it laid out was like, I thought this was like the main. Well, I guess these are the of the world battles, not necessarily the main tie.
Right.
And Secret War proper, and then the Battle War stuff is just, hey, this is all the battles going on within the world.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time. And then what's the other one? Because it was Last Days, it's Battle World, and there's another one that I'm drawing a blank on right now.
I couldn't remember.
Yeah, Last Days is the stuff with the quote-unquote old stuff, leading into Secret Wars, and then there's Battle World, and then whatever the other one is another tangential part that's of the world. Mm-hmm. Either way, the Battle World, and there was, Battle World was a pretty good issue. Like, we see a fight between Punisher Strange and the Misfit Four, let's say.
Right.
That in some kind of way, we start seeing body counts, which I think I asked this earlier. I'm like, I wonder if somebody's actually, because supposedly everybody's going to die within the series. So I wonder if anybody's kind of keeping track of who dies when and how much, what the actual body count is going to be. Because they got rid of, because if you play it, it plays out the way you think of it, they got rid of some heavies.
Sure. But I mean, they do end up showing up, probably in other ways. Exactly, in other ways, other alternative versions, So
right, they got the Spider-Verse books and the Thor books and whatever, even though no Thors have been
exactly. Whatever.
Oh man, go back to A-Force for a second because there was something in there. I find it kind of funny that Falcon has risen to the ranks of a Thor, having conquered the Captain America rank.
That didn't even occur to me as like something to mention. That's funny that you mentioned that now. Now I'm flipping back to it.
Yeah, because there was a part in A-Force which I guess is going to be a theme because of the fact that the Thor Corps is the police. Let's say in the whole of Battle World, they're going to be coming in when issues break out or when somebody runs afoul, and then you see Falcon Thor would be his name. I don't know.
Yeah. You're right. Now that I remember, now that I flipped to that page, I see exactly what you mean. It didn't even cross my mind. It's funny I'm a fan of the Falcon character so much so that it's almost like, well, they're not doing him the best service in the world by making him the new Captain America. It's like, well, we know that Steve is going to come back eventually. Why can't they just make Falcon the best Falcon he can be? But,
I don't know. I kind of disagree. I agree and kind of disagree.
Because I understand why it's important to have him step up and be Captain America. I do understand.
Because if anybody was worthy of holding the shield, it would be him. There's only a couple of people realistically, and those, the only other person that has had a shield already, which would be Bucky,
Right.
I mean, granted, you can make a case. You can make solid cases for other people also. But, those in the mythology of Captain America and the people closest around him, those two.
Oh, no, absolutely. Right, it's just that I feel like, I guess, when he finally, reclaims his original mantle, I'm hoping that, that Falcon is, the hero that he should be, that he can be,
He'll probably be closer to the movies, though,
which
that's not necessarily a bad thing, but yeah, it does kind of lose its steam knowing that he's probably not going to have it for too long, and even the time while he has it has been kind of hard, I guess. As soon as he got it, that's when the versions started happening. I mean, well, the inversion started happening already, but I mean, that's when AVX happened.
Right.
And then that messed up stuff, and then, you know, now it's going into Secret Wars, and they didn't really have a whole lot of time coming out of that, which he's not really giving a whole lot of, you know, good story time to himself in this time. But you know what? That's a whole other subject for a whole different time.
Right. I mean, listen, we there's still a lot of time before Captain America Civil War comes out, so I have a feeling that Falcap's going to be with us for the duration, at least until that point.
True. And even if there's a chance he'll stay after that, because it's not like they're going to say, hey, you know what, he's not Captain America, we're going to give back to Bucky because of this. That may potentially happen in Civil War, you know, if that happens. Spoiler alert.
Right. Ring the bell. Ring the bell. All right.
I don't even know how that's even going to play. But yeah, but Battle Royale was pretty good. The Punisher Strange stuff I'm kind of curious about, because that ended in kind of a way, even though, you know.
Well, see, it's funny that you bring up that story and how Strange plays into that, because we see Doctor Strange having a separate role, you know, that we've seen highlighted in the Secret Wars miniseries proper, and he appears in all. He seems to be appearing in a lot of the. He appears in A-Force as, you know, a major character, basically the right hand of Doom. And it's interesting to see how it's that character. It's Strange that is utilized by Doom as his right hand man, as opposed to any of the other characters.
Well, and I'm thinking that may or may not have a point to, because if you remember, what was it, New Avengers?
Yes, New Avengers.
He was there with them, so I'm kind of wondering if they are playing off of some of that.
That is almost certainly the case. You know, that they definitely set that up with putting Strange in that position as one of the one of those, you know, as the progenitor of the that group, you know, one of those warring groups. So they definitely placed him, you know, in that position to, you know, to play a major role going forward. So, you know, it's interesting to see at least one aspect or one version of Strange being the sheriff, quote unquote, for Battleworld. And then another aspect of Strange, you know, being this Brother Voodoo type character.
Right. Yeah, to which we don't know how that's playing off, or if that is indeed. Well, we can almost pretty safely say that that's not the same. They're not the same person.
Right.
But at the same time, we don't know what the tie between them is, if there are any. You know, Voodoo Strange could be the Strange from the 616 as we know it. For all we know, it then something happened to get him into the predicament that he was in. We don't know. The story's to y'all. There was also a backup, but moving right along, though.
Did you read any of the other Secret Wars books?
I did.
Did you say you read Master of Kung Fu?
I did read Master of Kung Fu. The Battle Royale also had a backup story with MODOK, which I thought was funny.
I skipped that. Like, I read it. I tried to read it, and I guess I'll go back to it. You thought it was funny?
Well, it was funny because of, like, they had, like, the main MODOK, and they had MODOK from Secret Warriors, and they had all different, you know, multiversal MODOKs, but then they had the one baby girl MODOK.
Oh, no.
Kind of a running joke.
Gotcha.
Which I think came from, I'm trying to remember, was Next Wave, or that was, I can't remember where she came in on, but that whole thing was like, okay, for that part alone, it was just kind of silly. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't anything totally necessary. And then you also see some Thors show up there also, because
of course.
So, but outside of that, yeah, like, you can go back to it if you want to. It's nothing real. I don't think it's anything that's going to affect the main story too much.
But gotcha.
Master of Kung Fu number one.
Right. I noticed that you read this, and, you know, I noticed on Twitter that you read this, and I tried to read this on the way home, and it seemed a little hard to get into, and I figured I'll go back to it over the weekend. But tell me about it, and tell me what you liked and didn't like about it.
So I enjoyed this. So this is set. This seems to be set in Kunlun, and apparently, so they have a tournament every 13 years or something like that. Now, they make references to the 13th Chamber, which it makes me think of Wu-Tang.
And
But in this land, we have. So we have a tournament to see who rules, and who ended up ruling seems to be ending up being either somebody from the Ten Rings Clan or the Hand, the Red Hand, which we know what the allegories for those both of those are. And turns out, as of right now, the ruler is the Mandarin, they don't call him that by name, but I think that's definitely who
it is. Definitely, yeah, I was about to say that's strongly implied. Mm-hmm.
And then the neat part about it is you have other characters playing in, like you have, like, for some reason, Callisto from the X-Men. Mm-hmm. Loki comes in as a dragon.
Right, that, you know, like there was a couple of small appearances where I was kind of confused.
Right. So, and you know, so basically in this land, we also have Shang-Chi, of course, Master Kung Fu, who is down on his luck. He's drunk. He's kind of like, he's pretty much drunken master. You might as well say at the beginning of this book, you know, but he also is being played as, hey, this is the long lost, you know, champion of, you know, he is this big champion once upon a time, but has now fallen on long time, on bad times, but he's also the emperor's son. Mm-hmm. You know, in some kind of way. But so you're probably going to see him come out of his situation and rise above where he started off as. You see him buddying up, well, not buddying up, but you see him fall in with this, it looks like a resistance group. Mm-hmm. You know, that is against the current
government. The Ten Rings, yeah.
So we don't know how that's going to play off, but we just see how it's just setting up that part, that country, and you know, what's going on. No Thor show up in this one.
No. But we do have an Iron Fist show up.
We do have an Iron Fist. Oh, yeah. That was the part I don't know why I forgot about that. Yes. So, yes. So Danny Rand, well, they don't call him by name, but Iron Fist shows up from the Iron Fist clan, obviously. Mm-hmm. Shows up. There was also one mention of the Panther clan, which I'm kind of curious if that's like Wakanda.
I wonder. I missed that. I'm gonna have to go back. Like I said, I tried to get into it, but I kind of skimmed it on the way home.
Because they've referenced other clans in the midst of telling the story, which they said like the J clan, the Red Hand, mm-hmm. which I'm assuming, and there was another cameo by the leader of the Red Hand called the Red Psi, which I'm only going to assume is Elektra.
Elektra, yeah.
And I think that's about it. But yes, Danny Rand comes in as a rival and he's pretty much at the beck and call of the emperor for his sheriff of Nottingham, I guess would be the closest allegory, and also rival to, you know, Shang-Chi.
It's all right.
Yeah.
It's all right. So I was looking at the map of Battle World, and Kunlun is actually not a very big is not a very big area.
Right.
So I guess all these clans are very, you know, they're very they're pretty much right on top of each other.
Either that or they're like close. They still have borders that they can come in and out of, because it's not really established. Because if you think about A-Force, you saw Namor and his group just kind of come through, but then again, there's a ocean. So.
Well, no, I was about to say with A-Force, they're surrounded by water, so that sort of makes sense.
Yeah.
You know?
But some of that was like, hey, some people can't come and go, or they kind of mingle with, you know, other bordering places.
Right. So, but I'm glad that you liked it, and I'm glad that, you know, you were able to get into it, and it gives me reason to read it, you know, kind of read it through thoroughly.
Yeah. At one point, it was a potential Click of the Week, and it kind of still is, but I think there's one that might take it over.
No kidding.
Yeah.
All right. So what else did you read from Marvel? Did you read
Oh man. Go ahead.
No. I was just looking at the list. Did you read what did you really like this week?
Loki was really good. Moon Knight was all right.
You want to talk about Loki? I that was one of the last things I read before getting home.
Oh, yes. Okay. So Loki was a last day's book. Mhm. I can't remember the number of the books.
14.
Okay, thank you. So it was the last day's book, and it takes up where... That's part of the book's actually kind of... I've been actually keeping up with it, but it's slightly confusing because you have King Loki from an alternate...
The future, right.
Yeah, from an alternate future. And then you have what presumably is our Loki right now, but he's been changed. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a Wolverine-ish type in mannerisms type of Loki.
I don't know about Wolverine, but maybe like early 20s hipster Loki, you know, whereas like we've gotten...
Well, no. Well, yes, he was during the course of this book, but now he has undergone another change.
Right.
Like he's kind of talking like darling and, you know, how you doing and that kind of stuff like that. Not necessarily country, but that's kind of he's a little rougher, let's just say, than he was previously in the book.
Gotcha. I always saw him as like a late teens, you know, kind of a punk kid in the earlier issues of this series.
Oh yeah, and he was, but like I said, right. since he's gone over this change since the last issue, you know, he has changed again.
Right.
Which they don't really touch on that too much. Like they go into it in the beginning because he is still in New York. And that fact, that whole part is pretty much recounting, almost goes through the last incursion that we saw in Secret Wars number one.
Right. This is literally the last days because we see, you know, we are it's running parallel to the incursion, the last incursion. Right.
And then it flips to Asgard where we see, you know, Odin and Freya doing this, pretty much going through the same thing, and just like Odin's finding out, it's like, hey, wait a minute, this is actually the end of everything, and he kind of be Odin, as it were, to
you know what's really cool? You know what was that. Cool about this book? I'm glad that you read this because it gives me a chance to talk about it more in depth. What was cool about this book is that there were a lot of callbacks in this issue to previous stories in Thor. You know, one was Thor kind of ending the Ragnarok cycle. You know, that mm-hmm. was a big deal at the beginning of this issue. Another one was, some of the female Loki stuff. You know, makes an appearance. And there's also a callback to original Norse mythology in this that involves Balder the Brave.
Yeah, and once now, granted, I'm not up on Thor, so I don't know when was the last time he's even been brought up.
Right, honestly, I don't even remember the last time we saw Balder. But in terms of what actually happens to Balder, that's straight out of Norse mythology.
Right.
You know, like the whole, it's not a spoiler if I'm talking about Norse mythology that's like hundreds of thousands of years old. I'm going to ring the bell anyway. It involves mistletoe. You know?
So, yeah, which that part I didn't pick up. I was like, okay, I knew this was something, but I didn't pick up.
That's straight out of Norse mythology. Mm-hmm. You know? So if you want to catch up on that, catch up on Edith Hamilton's mythology book. You recognize that from like high school English class.
I still have a copy of that book.
So, you know, you can consult that for the mistletoe reference that Al Ewing has masterfully pulled out. And the last reference that I got a kick out of, and I know this is what you're referring to, was the last cliffhanger page.
Yes. I love that page. But at least you can leave the whole interaction between Odin and Freya.
Yeah.
Was pretty good because Odin was just being the biggest jerk he always has been. And Freya's like, look, I'm suffering you, but all right. Mm-hmm. And then it comes to that, those last couple of pages, just like, all right. Odin just kind of comes around.
Yeah. I got a kick out of this because if you've been reading Thor since the Simonson run, because that's obviously what everybody refers to. This is a direct callback to the Simonson run.
Yep. And is this anything else? Happened? That last page was the that got me the most. It was like, all right. And just like I said earlier on Twitter, it was like, okay, between this, Moon Knight, and I guess Battle World, there seems to be a, you know, unwritten theme going on in this week's books. Because there's a lot of, this is probably going to spoil a little bit. There's a lot of...
Hold on. Spoil. Go ahead.
There's a lot of artillery being thrown around. Potentially going to be thrown around, you know.
Do you want to talk about Moon Knight real quick? Because I did read that also.
Yes, Moon Knight. So here we have, once again, the battle between Mark Spector and Khonshu, or so we think.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we find is, what we apparently find out is Mark goes into battle as Moon Knight against something that Khonshu did not want him to
engage. Right.
Right. He told him not to, but he did it anyway. And... you know, apparently Mark
gets his butt kicked.
Yes, badly. And Mark was like, "Fine, I don't need you," which has happened earlier in the series, you know, or in another about way because Khonshu pretty much went to somebody else, and Mark kind of did the same. Well, was forcibly did the same thing until that got turned around.
Right.
So here we have that a similar situation as that, and Mark being Mark kind of goes back to his old ways.
Or at least goes to his fallback position.
Exactly.
The non-superhero-y position of the mercenary training and the military training.
Right, he uses his particular skills that he's forgotten he has. He even references that in the middle of the book. So like, you know what? I totally forgot. That was a pretty good shot.
That's right.
Against this boogeyman, this pretty much literal boogeyman,
mm-hmm.
Who's been terrorizing, who's been killing kids, I guess, as the implication is.
Right.
By sneaking out from underneath their beds, and we catch the boogeyman trying to do one sustain when Mark comes back into action with his mercenary training. And the fight goes his way. And he just basically says, hey, Konshu, I don't need you anymore. I'm pretty much spoiling the whole thing, but it's, yeah. it's still...
You basically called him Jobu. I'm going to do it myself.
Exactly.
That was a Major League reference, people.
Oh, thank you. No.
You know? You know, he said, Jobu, I'm going to do this myself. So, but then hey, Yeah, exactly. But then the last panel is right. The kick in the gut.
Exactly. We found out that this boogeyman also has some ties to Khonshu.
Mm-hmm. And that was right. I was about to say, and that's what tied this whole issue together for me. And that last panel really made this book a candidate for Click of the Week for me. It's definitely up there. So as is Loki, by the way.
Exactly. Yeah. This one. Yeah, this one was definitely kind of up there. This was a pretty good week for candidates, I would right. say.
And what's funny is that, you know, this was a good week for the last day's issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like these books that aren't necessarily connected to the Secret Wars story. I mean, you know, Loki is because, you know, we're getting to the, you know, it involves the incursion, but Moon Knight is off on its own doing its own thing, and it was just a great standalone story.
Exactly. Which I appreciate it because, you know, even though we know there are some books that are not getting touched or at least not getting touched so far by, you know, by Secret Wars,
mm-hmm.
it's nice to have these other things, even though it's still kind of confusing. It's like, wait, so is this going to end because of Secret Wars or is this going to go off on its own, which is, I guess, Moon Knight is kind of doing. I'm not sure. I can't remember if this is going to end or not.
Yeah, I'm not. I can't say for sure. I don't want to waste time looking it up, but...
Right now, we'll find out when we find out.
Yeah.
So,
what else did you read? There's a couple of things I can mention, see if I could jog your memory. Sure. Uncanny X-Men?
Nah.
Star Wars number 5?
Not yet. Okay. I got that coming up. I meant to, but it was like some of the Secret Wars stuff I wanted to get out of the way. Okay. Like I do remember one, Guardians of the Galaxy 27.
Okay, let me pull that up. I read that too.
Yeah.
All right, you can start talking about it just so that, you know, I'm just giving myself a chance to pull it up.
Okay, so we end up, the Guardians are back on. Wait, did Guardians 3K come out this week? I can't remember. Or was that last week?
No, that was last week, 3000.
So never mind that then. So here we have the Guardians on Spartax. At the end of last issue, we see a planet that I remember we talked about this. We mm-hmm. thought an incursion, which it indeed was not.
Right, that was a bait and switch right there.
Right, because, and that was the thing, because it was like, wait a minute, I even said on the show, like, I don't remember an incursion even coming like that, you know, mm-hmm. and the focal point was on, as we now know, the focal point has been Earth for that right. kind of stuff anyway. So, but we do have a rogue planet coming along, and we also have a reappearance of the Chitauri.
They're ever present in these cosmic books, though.
I know, right? Well, since the movie, you know
they're always in Nova also.
Oh really? Yes, I haven't been reading Nova, so I don't know. But
yeah, they've definitely show up there.
They've been kind of positioned, let's say. Mm-hmm. And I think they came out of Ultimates. No, I mean initially came out of Ultimates, but just kind of found a way over this way with no ties to the right. 616. Just kind of came over out of the blue. But anyway, so we have what amounts to. And by the way, the cover. I said this on Twitter. The cover for Guardians 27 is kind of misleading. Because if you look at the cover, it has them kind of like they're breaking off, like they're just breaking up.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That doesn't necessarily happen. However, what does happen is the planet comes in, the planet gets attacked by the Chitauri and the person behind them, who happens to be an old enemy of Thanos's, mm-hmm. who's coming after Gamora. And we see, we see a fight, and the Guardians do as the Guardians does, but the main part of it is Gamora's fight, well, quote-unquote fight, because it's not so much of a fight. Like, she goes to where it goes onto the planet and has a nice little chat with the guy, I can't remember his name, Kindun or something, whatever his name is.
I'm looking it up now.
Yeah, basically saying, look, you don't want this fight. This is not the fight. This is not the fight you want. Leave or I will kill you.
You're right, Kin Doon.
Mm-hmm. So, which is, you know, I don't want to say uncharacteristically uncharacteristic for Gamora, because she would be the main one talking about, all right, just straight up get rid of this dude. Mm-hmm. But she was kind of being, you know, she was kind of being benevolent and was like, look, just leave because you don't want this. This is the fight you want.
I was going to say she has she has an enhanced sense of what she's capable of now. Like, she literally, you know, with this post black vortex power set that she has, you know. Which reminds
me of Quasar, so I don't know why. Well, I know why, but that's weird, because I didn't read Black Vortex, but you kind of get the gist of what happened.
Right, but, I mean, you know, she's enhanced to the point where she is comfortable taking on, you know, this level of threat. I mean, not that she wasn't formidable before.
Exactly. She's cosmically
powerful. Exactly. Now she's definitely, you know, she's like surfer level at least.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, but...
So, because of this fight, she ends up making the decision that affects the team.
Mm-hmm.
And goes about her business, to which it just ends up being kind of anticlimactic because, like I said, the cover's misleading.
Mm-hmm. And I wasn't a fan of where it ended, like the last page.
And see, that's the other kind of drawback to Secret Wars, because you'll see a lot of books that's kind of been ending like that. It's like, mm-hmm. It ends in place, but not anything that's final.
Right.
That's nothing that has any real closure, or may or may not even be taken back up.
Right.
After Secret Wars is over, because we don't know. Like I said, this was the last issue of this run.
Exactly.
It comes back, and hey, this is going to come back with how it ended, which basically ends with Peter and Kitty talking about what their plans are going to be going forward.
Mm-hmm. And what, and whether or not Quill decides to remain on Spartax.
Exactly.
And be the president/king.
Yeah. But we get no closure to that. We just get them talking about it, and they get to a place, and then done.
Right. And then, you know, I was talking about in the news earlier that the books are going to pick up 8 months into the future, post-Secret exactly. Wars. So, you know, who knows if we pick up on this particular thread, you know, where Guardians ends.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Or even, like, the stuff that went on in Guardians 3K, which is why I mentioned that, because we do see Quill, you know, as the leader of Spartax, or, yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Exactly.
At the time, ultimately, there's been a couple of different issues, you know, of the different books that has also said that may or may not be canon.
Right.
So we leave that for what it is right now.
Rod, did you read Avengers World?
I did. Oh, thank you for reminding me. Yes, Avengers World, I did read that. This is also a potential click of the week.
Yes.
Like I said, there's been a really couple. So what we have,
well, I'm
here,
glad you're able to get on so you could talk about it, because, you know, I would have been kind of waxing poetic about some of these books on my own and, like, kind of just, you know, running out of breath talking about how much I enjoyed at least the books that we just finished talking about. You know, my click of the week candidates, because, you know, Moon Knight was great because it gives you that, like, that great twist at the end. Loki was great just because there were so many callbacks to, like, classic moments of Thor and, like I said, even classic mythology. Mm-hmm. And Avengers World, what is this, number 21, fills in so many of the gaps of exactly. What happened to Namor and the Cabal.
Yes, right? As a matter of fact, I'm trying to remember of the issue of New Avengers that this ties back into, because that last page does tie back into, if I'm not mistaken, does tie back into, like, at least one part or a panel or two of New Avengers that pops up in.
Definitely. And I didn't go back to check that, but I do recall the issue that you were referring to. It was really great to see, you know, to see this particular aspect of the story told. You know, like how Namor kind of gets to the point where he's kind of given up on the Cabal, and how, you know, it's kind of as much as we like to see what T'Challa ends up doing to him, or at least trying to do to him,
right,
we kind of see where, you know, Namor's like, you know what, I tried this was a bad idea, and now I'm going to try to fix it.
Yeah.
It's kind of good that we got this after T'Challa tries to kill him.
The nerve of him trying to redeem himself, because like, you know what, every time I want to hate Namor, he does something that's kind of halfway redeeming. I was like, all right, fine.
That's the way the character's always been portrayed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's funny that, you know, that, you know, that this, you know, that this basically fills in that gap. And I liked the interlude with the alternate world Fantastic Four.
Right.
That Namor has. It's a discussion with a version of Reed and Sue Richards. And, you know, I like the fact that, you know, and it makes obvious sense of all the characters other than maybe a version of Jim Hammond, you mm-hmm. know, that would be, you know, that would be the interaction that Namor finds on any alternate Earth.
Which we have seen in the past because, I can't remember, was it New Avengers again, where, you know, pretty much the last couple of times he's gone to a world, he's, you know, run into a version of one or two, one or both of them.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, I think even the beginning page of this book, you'll see his interaction with a version of Sue Storm, or at least the ending the ending of the interaction of Sue Storm in another dimension, in another universe, excuse me.
Right.
So, but yeah, that whole thing was like, all right, that was a well played, but then it, as it tends to happen, did not work out the way he planned.
Mm-hmm.
And sets up to where, I guess, you know, I'm trying to remember it. At the beginning of Secret Wars, was he there with them when it came? Well, spoiler alert, they're
right.
on Battle The Cabal is on Battle World.
Right, and you know they're going to be there to cause all sorts of mischief and mayhem.
Mm-hmm.
So
they are unaffected by everything else that's been going on, which kind of obviously, well, almost obviously says that, hey, that other, the heroes that we know also escaped, they're probably going to show up at some point.
And I wanted to highlight one thing about this book that I found interesting, kind of intriguing, that it took an Avengers book to really develop Roberto da Costa into an adult.
Yes. Well, about as close as he's going to get.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly. But, you know, it's funny that, you know, it's taken this book, you know, it's done more for Sunspot than it's done for Cannonball, despite the fact that it made Cannonball a father and a husband, basically, you know.
Sure.
This book has really done, you know, has really developed Roberto da Costa's character, you know, leaps and bounds beyond what he was, even in some of the more character, you know, some of the more developed stories that have been told from, you know, within the pages of, let's say, X-Force.
Right, or you know? Factor, whatever those. Yeah, because you saw him in those others, like, yeah, he's got his own business going on there, and he's doing stuff with other people, but you really don't see him front, see him center, I guess. But then, yeah, I didn't read a whole lot of those other ones, so there might be some stuff that I'm missing. But you're right, we don't really get a whole host of character development for him.
Right, yeah. And yeah. If there's one character that has obviously benefited from Avengers World, the book, it's Sunspot.
Yes, because the Avengers World, the book, has not benefited from pretty much anything.
Yeah. So, you know, we have Sunspot, and I wonder, you know, I know I've discussed this before. I mentioned it, that Kurt Busiek, when he relaunched Avengers, included Justice and Firestar on his initial team.
I remember that.
And, you know, it was, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, they're traditionally not, you know, Avengers characters, you know, this is a way to kind of develop them and, you know, draw in from the mutant and the new warrior and the non-Avenger part of the universe. Whereas, you know, obviously this was another sort of way to diversify the Avengers roster. I mean, yeah, we joke about how the Avengers basically includes everybody now, but,
yeah,
you know, when they first relaunched and made this Avengers World type team, you know, these two former New Mutants slash X-Men, you know, play, you know, like they at least appeared to have prominent roles on the team, but it wasn't really fleshed out until much later.
Right.
And
right, because you kind of saw them as they were there on the side, kind of, you know, doing their buddy thing.
Exactly. They were doing kind of a comedy shtick that you know, at certain points in the book, but they've really kind of developed, you know. Maybe not in the main story, but in the Avengers World stories, at least. So now we have, you know, these two former X-Men who've developed into, you know, pretty main Avengers characters, and I'm curious to see what becomes of these two characters post-Secret Wars. Are they going to remain, you know, main players in the Avengers franchise, or are they going to be kind of, I don't want to say relegated, because, you know, I love the X-Men. I've, you know, been a huge X-Men fan for a long time, but it feels like almost a step back for them.
Right.
You know, yeah. I hate to say it that way, but it does feel like a step back for them if they end up going back to the X-Men books.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, we do know there's going to be remnants of Secret Wars staying after, you know, after the event ends. We also already know the new Avengers lineup that does not include them. So who's to say what's going to happen to them after Secret Wars goes on? And I think the part of this book that we actually hadn't touched on yet was that part of was that part with Sunspot and them, which goes back a few months, involving like right before Thor and Hyperion and the rest of them went through the multiversal gate to fight and eventually end up losing to, you know, the Beyonders.
The Beyonders, yeah.
Despondent Thor, or excuse me, Odin's son.
Mm-hmm.
Right before the he kind of came out of his funk. This is actually the issue where he came out of his funk.
Mm-hmm.
The recognitions of Sunspot, which I thought was really nice.
It was clever because, you know, it's old school in the sense that, yeah, you know what, we got to snap him out of it. We got to do something. But it was still, you know, it was still pretty cool to see that Sunspot, you know, I kind of had a hand in this, but yeah.
Yeah, no, Hyperion was like, it's very convenient that somebody just happens to attack us when, you know, and shake some things loose.
Exactly. Exactly.
Trying to get the thing done. I'm like, yeah, I might have had something to do with it. And yeah, coincidence. Go figure.
That's funny. That is funny.
Pretty cool.
All right, let's see. Rod, we're actually getting to a pretty late hour. Are you going to have a couple more minutes, or should we do any? Do you have any rapid fire reviews, because we could actually get to Click of the Week now and have a good show in the can.
I still don't know what my Click of the Week is, but yeah, I need to be heading out in a few minutes, so yeah, so let's do this. And I don't think I have much left because
I won't spoil Star Wars number 5. I liked it. It was good. Yeah, I liked it. It was good. I'm going to miss the Cassidy artwork. You know, he's only on for, I think, another issue.
Right.
So, you know, I won't talk too much about that. Planet Hulk, I touched on earlier. This was another strong Secret Wars book. I like the story that they're trying to tell in this, you know, with the gamma-powered inhabitants. There is a cool backup story in this, by the way. When you have a chance to read this, Roddy, I recommend it. There's a cool backup story in this that's written by Greg Pak, the writer of the original Planet Hulk story in the Hulk book.
That's right. I think I saw him mention it. Yeah. All right.
So I would recommend this as a Secret Wars book to read. It was a lot of fun, and I like the backup story as well, which explains how this particular alternate Marvel universe became Hulkified.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty, okay. You know, it was pretty good. Let's see here, Ultimate End number 1. Did you happen to catch that?
Nah.
Okay. So this is kind of a I did not expect. This book to be what it was. I expected this book to be sort of a last days of the Ultimate Universe,
mm-hmm.
right? But Ultimate End is literally a team-up book, believe it or not, between the 616 and the 1610, the Ultimate and the 616 universe, the regular Marvel U. Yes. So if you're interested in what that might look like, read this book.
Yeah, I might check it out.
You know? I was very surprised to see that was the premise of the book when I started flipping through it. I was very surprised.
Right. When I saw that, I was thinking, okay, well, this is pretty much the end of Secret Wars. I mean, this is the Secret Wars side from the Ultimate part, you know, from the Ultimate view, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't expect that to be the case.
No, it's very, you know what? It's kind of hard to reconcile where we remember how Avengers ended. And Secret Wars starts with a certain group of Marvel heroes making it through
right.
the last convergence,
right,
and the creation of Battleworld. And, you know, this issue, I mean, I guess, you know, we haven't gotten to the end of convergence yet. So, but, you know, at the same time, the last, the way this reads, right, no, the way this reads is that I think this is post-incursion because we have a mashup of the two universes, and we have an appearance at the end of the book of a key factor, a key group, we'll put it that way, a key group in the Secret War story. So, you know, like I said, it's kind of difficult to pin down how this is all how this all ties into Secret Wars, like where it fits into the Battle World map, or if it's even meant to.
Gotcha.
You know, it's not what I thought it was. And, you know, on second read, I might actually pick up the physical copy of this because I was so intrigued by the story that was being told.
All right.
You know, is that interesting? I was kind of, like I said, kind of taken aback by how I was surprised by the story they were trying to tell in this. I honestly thought this was going to be a Last Days type story for the Ultimate Universe.
Right. Who wrote it?
This is Bendis.
Ah, figures. Okay.
Yeah, it's Bendis, Bagley doing the pencils.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
You know? Huh. Like I said, I was pleasantly surprised by how surprised I was by this. Let's see. What else did I take a look at this week? Talked about Star Wars. Uncanny X-Men number 34. This is, spoiler alert, this is the story of the comeuppance for Mystique, because Mystique was playing a lot of games, especially with a certain disco-inspired mutant, right?
Okay.
And there's a bit of a comeuppance that happens in this book, but we also learn that, you know, the students of the Xavier School that Cyclops left behind, basically, kind of have thoughts on what they want to do with their own, you know, what they want to do with their lives post Xavier School. They may not want to become students at the Jean Grey School. So we're going, you know, I talked about the news earlier that Uncanny X-Men number 600 is going to be shipping after Secret Wars.
Right.
So this story is not going to be concluded until after Secret Wars. And did you read the part where Brevoort, where they updated it and Brevoort had something to say about it?
Yes, Gambit.
What was it? I mean, what did they make a point of saying, oh, something is going to happen in Secret Wars that affects this, or they're just waiting to put it out, or what?
From what I see, and it was like way earlier when I remember, so it just seemed like, yeah, it was nothing. They're just holding it off because it just so happened that Secret Wars got in the way, but not necessarily, I don't think it's being affected by it, but I might be wrong about that.
Okay. All right, I wasn't sure what to make of it. I didn't want to dive into the article because I hadn't read it yet. But
right. I remember skimming the article because at this point, when Brevoort says something, I kind of make a choice whether to tune out or not, because sometimes he kind of sounds like a jerk. But anyway,
you know what it is? He's trying to induce people to read the book. You know, right. There's only so many ways that they can say, just read the book.
Which I respect that.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, but from what I think it was, pretty much was like, yeah, this is in the way, it has nothing to do with that, and it's just, they wanted to give it its own place, I guess.
Right. But what I liked about this issue, and it's not Click of the Week candidate, it's not Click of the Week material, really, but I like the fact that this was a well-done comeuppance for Mystique, you know, executed by Dazzler herself.
Yeah.
You know, I really liked it. So it's worth reading if you wanted to see, you know, kind of how that story sort of wrapped up, you know, if you're curious about that at all, you know, you want to pick up this issue.
Yeah, speaking of Dazzler, I really appreciate the fact that they put Disco Suit Dazzler in A-Force.
Yeah.
Well, that's just such a throwaway. I mean, yeah, but they, you could even see in the book, or even in other books, you just see, like, yeah, we're just going to throw these, you know, this version here and that version, because like, you even saw, like, the Phoenix, which I guess we saw, like, the Phoenix and other people, but that aside, yeah, I appreciated that whole the Disco Suit Dazzler.
That's cool.
I don't remember ever being in it with a case, but who knows? Could be magic. I don't know. So yeah, what else you got?
That's pretty much it. I tried to read Spider-Verse number one. I really couldn't make it through. I'm gonna have to sit and try to reread that. Let's see if there's anything else.
Yeah, like I know one or two things I've read, but I cannot recall it right about
I'm
now.
I'm glad that you came on the show, Roddy, because you're of a certain vintage, and you know everyone loves it when I say that, right?
Indeed, indeed.
So you are one of the co-hosts that actually read the original Secret Wars.
Yes, I did.
And the book that I'm going to reference, my last kind of rapid fire review, is Deadpool's Secret Wars.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Colin Bunn. Yeah, I was about to say, Cullen Bunn wrote this, and if you have any recollection of the panel layout, you know, it's funny, I was talking about Mike Zeck's art, right? There's so many of these panels that are pretty faithful recreations of the layouts of those pages,
right?
And, you know, you'll get a kick out of reading this book and seeing how, because, listen, we know what the premise is. They announced the premise months ago that this is going to be basically Deadpool being inserted into the events of the original Secret Wars.
It's like they did with that Spider-Man in the Secret Wars book that came out a few years ago. They pretty much, well, let me phrase that. They extended Spider-Man's role in Secret Wars, kind of like more behind-the-scenes stuff.
Right.
Because Spider-Man was, you know, involved.
He's actually there, right? Exactly.
They just added more to it, you know, to his involvement with whatever miniseries that was. But yeah, I've kind of figured this was what this was.
Right.
Well,
whereas in this one, this is absolutely tongue-in-cheek. We all know Deadpool was not there.
Right.
But... But it is a lot of fun. And honestly, this was click of the week material only because it made me laugh and smile in so many instances where I just remembered what the original panels looked like, and then I thought, and then I just imagined Deadpool sticking himself into that whole story.
Right.
You know, and I could just kind of imagine what my like 7-year-old self would be like reading this. You know, yeah. With Deadpool involved.
Right. And see, I have gone on record as saying that I am not the biggest Deadpool fan, but I am going to read this because of, like, all right, I want to see how he got inserted in. Actually, kind of has shades of that Duke book also, because I know there was that Duke book where he inserted himself in a whole lot of stuff.
Right. The cool part about this, honestly, is they make a definite point of referencing, you know, specific parts of the first issue of Secret Wars and, you know, just not just the first issue, but several issues of that limited series. So you'll appreciate, you know, the art and the scenery and the setting because it's obviously, you know, it gets the it hits you right in the nostalgia center of the brain.
Okay, here's a question that may or may not be spoiler.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, is this a one shot or is this a couple of issues?
Okay, I'm gonna ring the bell, and I think this is issue. I want to say 1 of 4.
Okay,
but let me double check because you know I think they announced that right at the beginning of the book, but I'm not 100% sure.
So what I wanted to ask while you're looking that up was, does he have anything to do with the mountain?
That is teased next issue. That is teased for the next issue. Yes, it is Deadpool Secret Wars number 104, and I'm strongly considering picking this up when I pick up my physical issues tomorrow.
Nice.
You know, it's I enjoyed kind of, you know, the nostalgia of it that much. You know, it's funny to put it that way.
Understood. Yeah, look at that. I know we have our review copies, so I may check this out. And I'm actually thinking about getting a couple of physical copies of a couple of books this week. I didn't get a chance to do it today or yesterday because I went to the store early before they got the copies in. And I'm like, all right, I got to go to bed, so I will come back to this later.
I got you. All right. So I think that covers everything. I think we've done rapid fire. So I think we're going to have to settle on our clicks of the week.
Yeah. And like I said, this was kind of a hard one to do this week. Because there's like two, if we've already gone over like two or three, you know, between.
Like strong candidates, right? Yeah.
And I still haven't even read Star Wars yet. So there's no telling how that one could have, if that would have played a part for me.
It was good. I don't think it was click of the week candidate. It wasn't a candidate for me because I thoroughly enjoyed some of the other books a lot more.
I gotcha.
All right. Let me throw mine out, or at least let me throw my candidates. I mean, we've already talked about what our candidates are. I think that my strongest candidates were, surprisingly enough, Deadpool Secret Wars number one. Actually, I'd read Daredevil number 15.1. That was pretty interesting too, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm not going to go into it, but that was pretty good. A-Force number one is a candidate.
Yes, yeah, here too.
Moon Knight was a candidate, and Loki was a candidate. So I'm really, you know, I'm definitely torn this week.
At this point, you know, like shout-outs to definitely A-Force and Moon Knight, but I think I'm going to at this point go with Loki.
Man, I was leaning that way too because I loved the back and forth between Odin and Freya at the end. And like I said, there's like a real callback to Norse mythology with the bit between Loki and Baldur too. So, man, even that was.
Yeah, like Battle World and almost made it there, but there wasn't enough there to kind of go full on with it.
Well, not with like, that, just that half story. I mean, yeah, it was okay, but.
Yeah. Like, all right, I would have wanted to see, you know, a little before that and after that. And then there was parts of that story was like, well, wait a minute. If he had this power all this time, why didn't he use it when he was being chased as other, you know, like, why did everything have to culminate where he was and the way it did? That was great, but yeah, too much about that. So right. Yeah, I think I'm going to give it to Loki. Man. You know, with everything else that's been said, and especially with that last page, because I love that page.
I got
a screenshot for that because I'm probably going to put that on Instagram. You know, as every now and then I would do that for certain panels.
Sure.
So I think that one's probably going to end up on there at some point.
Listen, I don't blame you. I envy you that you can make that call so confidently, so readily, to say, look, this Loki's the one. I'm still on the fence. Part of me wants to be Loki because, you know, I love everything that we were just talking about, you know, in the book. And I may have to back you up on that. And
the way the whole story kind of played out, and the way it kind of, you know, ran through the different parts of it, and there was probably arguably a part, you know, one or two parts that were stronger than the others.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, because of the way it flowed and the way it was written, and the, you know, obviously the art too, but you know, just the way it flowed.
Right. See, what I think
slightly confusing, especially with the Last Day stuff was a little, right, you know, whatever. But then once it started going into the Odin, the Asgard part of it, mm-hmm, it kind of picked up.
Right. What I was going to say is, I think that's probably the book's weakness, is that the interesting part's not about Loki. The interesting part's really about Odin and what's happening in Asgard.
Right.
You know, but it is also evil. You know, it's future evil King Loki that it's kind of the motivation. He's the precursor. He's the pretext for all of this happening.
Right.
So, you know, I guess it still does involve Loki, or at least a version of Loki, just not the hero of the book, or at least the subject of the book. Man, you know what? I'm going to go, man, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? This is tough. You know what? I'm going to go with, as much as it pains me to say this, I'm probably going to go with Deadpool Secret Wars number one. As my click of the week, only because it hit it was really, you know, playing me like a fiddle, playing the nostalgia center of my brain like a fiddle.
You know what? If that's what gets you, that's where you gotta go.
Right. And like I said, I don't think I had any more fun reading a book than I had reading that. But that is not a slight against A-Force number one, Planet Hulk number one, Moon Knight number 15, your click of the week, Loki Agent of Asgard number 14. All great, great reads this week. Strong, mm-hmm, strong candidates for click of the week.
Right.
Alrighty. So, is there anything you wanted to add, like any bit of news that you wanted to talk about maybe I didn't cover, or something new to add before we wrap up?
No, we better wrap this up because I probably need to be going.
Alrighty. So, thank you one and all for joining us.
Are we still on for potential treasure edition?
I'm not sure. What I was telling people earlier is that I have not yet watched The Flash.
Okay.
So I'd like to include The Flash into a treasure edition so that we kind of do like a recap of the comic book television that ends this season. So, I mean, we may do maybe not like 15-minute segments. It may be a little bit less per, but we'll do, like, if you want to do Arrow, if we want to pull someone else in to do Arrow, we can talk S.H.I.E.L.D. and we can talk Flash, you know?
Yeah. Well, we can kind of discuss that offline. Yes,
we can absolutely discuss that, because then, you know, we can make this big treasure edition based off of, even though I wanted to keep the treasure edition to like small chunks so that we could make it manageable, but if we wanted to do like a big blow-up episode that covers all of the season finales, you know, then that might be worth doing too.
Yeah, because I have words on that Flash one. So
yeah, see, I have to watch it. Got to give me a chance to watch it. But
not so much. But anyway, the Arrow and
She-Hulk for me, S.H.I.E.L.D. So
yeah, Flash and Shield, I definitely have words for. But yeah, we'll do that offline. Go ahead and bring it on home.
You got it. All right. Well, so thanks, everyone, for tuning in to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. Again, you can find our hosts on Twitter at TimDOGG98 and at TheClickNation and at CBCron. You can find Roddy Cat at Roddy Cat, RoddyKat, and at NewsNerdsNeed on Twitter. You can find PCN_Dirt on Twitter at PCN_Dirt and at PopCultureNet on Twitter. And his website is PopCultureNetwork.com. And you can find me on Twitter at Agent_70. And who knows? Maybe we'll be starting. I was thinking about The Void Left Behind by Bill Simmons being fired by ESPN and being let go from his position as editor of Grantland. Who knows? Maybe we'll be starting a show to help fill that void on the Cold Slither Podcast Network. Spoiler alert, maybe, or at least, it's a thought that crossed my mind. So, we'll see if that pans out. But anyway, thanks for joining us on the Comic Book Chronicles episode number 120.
Woo-hoo.
Get that, 120.
Anyway.
Have yourselves a happy Memorial Day weekend. Salute to the troops. And make sure to tune in next week for another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles, where we hope to have a few more hosts together with us. So until next time, take care. How does Tim wrap it up?
We are the Comic Book Chronicles.
And we are signing off. Peace.